Right. Yeah, it's hap I'm happy to be with you. And thank you for inviting me. And let me pause. It looked like my video froze. So let me just say one thing before I begin. I've got high speed internet, and occasionally my Zoom seems to freeze up. I'm not sure what that's about. So please accept my apologies because I'm supposed to have like super duper high speed connection. So, if I freeze up occasionally, and it might happen once or twice, I might pause just to make sure it unfreezes. So it's a little mysterious to me why that happens. Anyway, so good evening, everyone. And one thing I wanted to, what I'd like to do this evening is I'd like to speak for a little while, but I'm hoping to save time for us to open up for group discussion. I'm certainly can keep talking the whole time, but and I've been known to do that. So but I hope we'll have time where if you have questions, it's fine, but just keep that in mind. But you may have your own wisdom to share or comments. It doesn't have to just be questions, anything. So just keep that in mind if things come up that you might want to bring to the group. I was recently reflecting. I don't know what made me remember this, one of the old Western philosophers, Descartes. And it's been a lot of years, but since I've read and studied Descartes, I think maybe I was taking a philosophy class way back in college or something. So I don't remember a lot of detail. He was very famous as a philosopher, made contributions to mathematics. Interesting person. He's most famous, I think, for the quote, "I think, therefore I am." And my recollection from reading him was that he said he was trying to go back to, I don't remember his exact word, but first principles. What could he know that was most just basic and fundamentally true? And then from there, build his philosophical view or his philosophical system. And I was reflecting on that because I think I would like to suggest that from a Dharma perspective, we kind of do the same thing, have our own version of going back to the essence, and then having that inform how we move forward, how we live, how we act, where we're aiming our lives. So I want to offer my own take on that. And it's interesting. When you think about what's fundamentally of essence, we may not all have the same take on that. So I'm going to offer you one perspective, but it'd be interesting. I don't know if people will offer a different perspective. And the way I want to present it is, as I've reflected on this, it strikes me that we come down to, so what Descartes was doing, he was going back to what was the most fundamental thing he can know. I would like to separate it out that there's more than that. There's fundamentally what we know, but there's also what's most fundamental that we do not know. I think we need to bring that into the equation also. And so, when we think, well, what is it that we know? We'll take that side of the equation first. What's most fundamental? It's a cliche to say that there's only the present moment, right? But of course, we say that all the time in the Dharma world. But of course, as with many cliches, it's true. But there's actually a lot there. We can brush it off. Well, of course, there's only a present moment. But actually, it's quite profound when we hang out there. And I think what I'm not judging Descartes' take on it versus Dharma. I'm not saying one's better than the other because I think we each have to come to our own assessment on that, but it's different because I think from a Dharma perspective, what is it we can know in this present moment, which is really is all we have? Well, we certainly know what the nature of whatever experience is happening in the present moment. That's true, but there's actually even more we can drop down underneath that to know, well, what's even the nature of what's happening and what is. As Dharma practitioners and teachings that we say all the time, what we start to notice is, regardless of what the experience is, it's always changing, right? It's a flow, it's a process, and it just keeps going, it keeps unfolding. It's just like life, it's our whole being. You can't stop it, and it keeps moving along. And of course, the traditional way of speaking of it is to say it unfolds due to, how is it we say it, due to causes and conditions. So this is, you know, probably heard these teachings. You know, one of the things I should stop for a second is there's only one thing to say in the whole Dharma. And we give a million Dharma talks over and over. We got to say something, but it's just one thing. It's actually quite simple. The problem is it's confoundingly simple. Because when we look at what's happening, what we can know is just what I just said. We use this term emptiness. It's just a process. One of the things that, you know, sometimes I'll come back to my point in a minute, but, you know, even taking what we often hear in Buddhist or Dharma teachings, this idea of no self, which of course is not correct because we obviously all have a self. It's a terrible translation of the old words. It's just wrong. Buddha didn't teach that we don't have a self. Never, ever, ever taught that. You've got a self. The question is, what's the nature of the self? And we see that it's not a fixed permanent, that it's a process. And the way that Lee Brazington used to say it, which I liked, he would say, when we really dive deep, we see that we're not nouns, we're verbs. And I love that. That's what the teaching on no self really is. It was never no self. That's an English translation. We can talk about it during the discussion if you want, if you don't know what I'm getting at. But it was just, we're stuck with it because everybody says no self, but it's just not what the word means in the old Pali. Anatta doesn't mean that, but we say it. But we need to understand what we mean. It's a changing process. So this is what we can really know. And the other thing is that we only have so much control over this process. We have input into it, no question about it, right? We can influence the process, obviously. You know, if you eat healthy food versus unhealthy food, it has an effect. If you exercise versus not exercise, or, you know, if you smoke or don't smoke, or, you know, if you generate and try to cultivate a loving heart and a kind way of being with people versus not, it'll affect the way you interact with people, on and on. We can influence the process. But our intention is only one of the causes and conditions. And there's many other factors that oftentimes we won't even know, we can't see, we don't have access to. So we can influence the process, but so what we've got in the moment, let me just recap it. It's all changing all the time. Due to its own causes and conditions, only some of the causes and conditions are even known to us or that are within our control. I mean, just think about how many times, I don't know if you're like me, as I'm getting a little older, as I look around, I don't know everybody's age, but it looks to me like I'm older than some of you, and some of you are a little older than me. So some of you may know this more than I do. I'm 69, but over time, more and more, I just wake up some mornings and I get out of bed. Something just hurts. For no obvious reason. What's with that? What's going on with my leg? Why is it all? I don't even know what the causes and conditions. There was some reason. So this is, it's things like this, right? That's just a simple, kind of silly, fun example. It's not actually fun. But so this is what's known. What is unknown? Oh, there's one other thing that's known. In the present moment, this is what we can know about the nature of the present moment. We also know that it's quite uncertain, right? And not totally within our control. The other thing that's certain is where this whole life process is going to culminate. We know where it's heading, right? Dharma puts a lot of discussion on death and dying and all of that. So that's also known. What is unknown? Well, what's unknown comes right out of what is known, because things are changing due to causes and conditions, and we don't even know all the causes and conditions. We don't know what's going to happen next. We know the culmination of life, but between this present moment and then, it's unknown. Now, we kind of know, like probably whatever you think is going to happen between when our session ends this evening and you go to sleep, you go to bed tonight, You may have an idea. Probably it will. It's not guaranteed, though. And when this isn't to make us scared, but it's just to notice really honestly, and we extend this out further, there can be a lot of uncertainty. And it can be unsettling. It can be discomforting. And we can feel, you know, unease, or some people have anxiety about it, right? So this is what we're left with. What's known is a changing process due to its own causes and conditions. Only so much in our control. So it's kind of not a... the point is, if we're looking for our well-being in having to have or having to not have certain experiences, it's not a reliable refuge. Putting your refuge in something uncertain is not reliable. This is basic Dharma teachings. This is what I mean when I say that, you know, there's really only one thing in all of Dharma. All the rest is just different ways to point at the same thing. Combining that with what we don't know, what I think the Dharma is inviting us to do, it's asking us, it's not trying to tell us, it's just asking us to take a look and then hopefully use that to inform choices that we make in what is it we want our life to be about. You know, and I don't know how many people, hopefully we all, maybe we may have put some real conscious thought into, well, what is really of most highest, deepest value to me? Or what is of essence in who I want to be, how I want to show up in the world, the qualities I want to cultivate and bring forth? How do I want to interact with others? What is the influence I want to have in the world? What do I really want it to all be about in the deepest or highest sense? That's something that I think is worth reflecting on, and I hope we all do. We may or may not get concrete answers. Maybe we'll just get a sense or a feeling, or maybe we don't know, but it's worth hanging out with that question. What do we really want it to be about? And from a Dharma perspective, the traditional invitation of the teachings is to say, given all of this, you may want to consider that among all the other goals you have in your life, it may be useful, would it be useful to strengthen what we call liberation through non-clinging, the ability of the mind to let go of clinging. And it gets, that's really kind of an essential Dharma teaching. And it's interesting because I'm just thinking back to one of the famous old teachings of the Pali texts. Some of you have heard this many times. Some of you, it may be new, called the Kalama Sutta. That's the one where everybody quotes the Buddha as saying, don't trust what anyone else says. Just listen to yourself. By the way, it's not what for all of you who've heard that, that isn't what the Kalama Sutta says. What the Kalama Sutta actually says is, the background is he comes into this village where the clan is the Kalamas. And they complained to the Buddha. They said, you know, we've got one holy person every week rolling through town. And they're all saying that they're the only ones who've got the real truth. And they're criticizing all the other folks. So we're confused. We don't know who to believe. And then the Buddha does say, don't even go by me, the Buddha. He doesn't call himself the Buddha. Call himself the Tathagata. But he just said, don't even go by me. Because I have a reputation, you have to know for yourself. But he specifically says, here's the thing you should know for. So he actually does tell them something. He says, here's what you should know for yourself. He says, check it out. Let me ask you a question. If you've got greed, hatred, or delusion kind of as the force within you that's kind of impelling you into how you live, is that to your benefit or your detriment? And of course, it's a good teaching story, they all say. Well, it's to our detriment. What if you liberate yourself from greed, hatred, and delusion? Another way of talking about non-clinging. Is that to your detriment or your betterment? They say, well, that's to our benefit. That is the thing. He doesn't say just know anything for yourself. He actually says something very specific to know for yourself. So he's inviting us to look and see and we have to be able to pay attention moment to moment in our lives when we're driven by greed, hatred, and delusion, any or all of those. how does that go for us? How's it work out? We check for ourselves. We don't need someone to tell us. We can look into our own experience. And the times when our mind's freed in those ways, how's that go? And then he adds another piece in. He also gives it, he's very directive then. He says, also, you should cultivate the Brahmaviharas, loving kindness, compassion. They call it empathetic joy, equanimity. But I just lump those all as the heart qualities. I have my own way of articulating. I include empathy and kindness. Actually, those are my, and I don't use the term loving kindness. I think it's a beautiful term, nothing wrong with it. I just like love, personally, just love. Loving kindness is good too, but I just want to say it straight out. Love, empathy, kindness, compassion, all these qualities of, right, the heart. So what the invitation then is, given here we are in this situation, there's what we know and what we don't know, and you can't stop it. It just keeps rolling along. What are we to do? So the invitation is, check for ourselves. What do we want our lives to be about? So I think that's the invitation for each of us. It's not really for anyone, I don't think, to tell us. We just have to come to our own choices in what's of essence in our lives. But let's at least reflect on Dharma teachings, I hope, and see, how does it land for us? What do we think? And how do we, how does that match up to our lived experience? So that's kind of the invitation, the sort of the Dharma. That's where, I don't remember where Descartes, has just been so long. He started with, I think, therefore I am, where we ended up. But from a Dharma perspective, at least my take on it is, we do our own version of it. And this is where I think it ends us up. It's suggesting, again, that along with everything elsewhere we're up for in life, can we take the heart and mind of non-clinging as far as we can, and the heart of love as far as we can. And so that may be something you'll have to, maybe that's what you're up to, your own version of it, or maybe something else. Whatever it is that we, wherever we land with it all, then we're left with, what are the things I can do that will support me to actualize those in my life more fully, right? That's why it's good to get clear on what we really want our life to be about. And it doesn't mean we live in alignment with it perfectly. None of us do that. We're human beings. But can we, again, live, actualize it more authentically more of the time? What do we do? Well, that's all the practices we're doing. And this gets down to, like, these meditation. Well, everybody showed up here. It's part of a meditation group, so I assume you wouldn't come to a group like this if you didn't see the value of however you're practicing, but these mental trainings, training the mind and the heart. And this is a big, big topic, but the only thing I would just want to say is that really, that I think, I hope we all know, there's some people here, over the years I've come to this group here and there, I don't know how many times, but a few times over the years. And I recognize some faces over the years. Some of you I don't. So I know some of you are longtime, very senior practitioners. Others may be newer. But I hope we can see the value, regardless of where we're aiming, of cultivating some fundamental qualities of learning to steady our minds. That's what the concentration piece, that word concentration is a little funny of a word because it has so many connotations, but learning to steady ourselves, our awareness, and bring in some mindful awareness. And this brings in all the insights, the qualities of the heart. These are all the qualities, and we're all working on them in different combinations. So some of us may be practicing in ways that emphasize one of the others, but there's no right or wrong way to practice. I think that's kind of good news. I'm going to end up in just a few minutes, so we have plenty of time for discussion. But I do want to say, I hope you'll hang in me. I realize I'm going to say it, but I have to stop because I realize what I'm about to say may be reactive in some people. So I'm going to say it, but then let me explain what I mean before, and then you can decide if you like it or not. I don't think it matters what you do in your practice. It doesn't matter. You can do anything. I actually mean that quite literally. So what do I mean? Wait a minute, surely I don't mean that. Well, if, first of all, I'm going to actually, it's even worse, but let me, if all the different ways, just the normal ways we do Dharma practices, all the ways meditation is taught, the side of the concentration, how much it gets emphasized or not, mindfulness, any of the ways it's ever been taught has worked for someone, or they wouldn't have taken that on as their main way of their system and how they taught. We know that all the different ways out there work well for some people and won't work well for others. It doesn't matter what it is. So it's just a matter of finding, you know, the combination of all these good Dharma qualities that work best for us. But I would take it even a little further. You won't probably hear this from anyone else, but let me stop. I do think it's really important to do formal trainings of our mind. We sit or you stand or walk or lie down, whatever I say sit. You do some form, you carve some time out to do formal practices and to, it doesn't matter if you're any good at it or not, but just learning to study our mind some, at least try. Try to sit and be present with ourselves. Try to cultivate a little mindfulness, qualities of the heart. So formal practice, I do think, is a huge big deal. So even though I'm saying that it really, if you could stay attuned, and this is kind of what I want to get at, if you could stay attuned with going back to what I suggested earlier, getting in touch with what you really think is most of essence in your life, what you really want it to all be about, most fundamentally important of who you want to be as a being and all that. If you could carry that, just when you can remember, it doesn't matter if you forget, when you remember, and just paying attention to how you're actually showing up and how that's mapping up against your ideals. I really think that that's all that's needed. All the trainings is just helping us being able to do that better. And what I mean by it is this. I'll just share with you my own practice, and it may be different than how you practice. So I've been meditating for 52 years. That's a long time. And I've put a lot into it too. And I consider myself of, you know, average natural ability, whatever, you know, I'm not this gifted concentrator, whatever, but you know, I just put the time in and I still, to this day, I meditate a fair amount. I don't know what would happen if I stopped. I haven't done the experiment. I just don't know. So I still meditate, it's still opening up in interesting ways. And so, I have my formal practice, but for me, my practice has actually gotten quite simple. Mostly I just move about in life and go about my business. And to me, again, you might have something different. I'm just sharing, it'd be interesting. Other people may share something different. For me, it's really simple. The times when I'm sort of resting in the stream of non-clinging and resting with an open heart, I don't do anything. I just live. When I see that I've gotten caught in, I've constricted, I've contracted, I'm in reactivity, I'm stuck in clinging, then my practice is to let go. And when my heart closes off, it's to open the heart. That's it. And what I found is that the formal practices have been tremendous. You know, I don't know if there's such a thing as the end of the path we talk about, but maybe it's just a kind of an infinite regression on the path or something. I don't know the answer to that. So, you know, I still have lots of work still to do, but that's okay because it's just the practice. It's just the path. When reactivity comes, you know that. And the practice, as so many of us know, I'm sure you all know too, is through all these practices, first, we have a disentangling that happens so that it's the word purification is kind of a, now that's not such a good word, but a lot of the unwholesome patterns in us tend to work themselves out. So even when we lose our mindfulness, we tend to naturally, habitually come from a better place, right? That's one of the healings that can happen from these practices. But also the awareness can be there more of the time naturally to know what's happening. So we're walking around on automatic pilot less of the time. So we know what's happening more, and our ability to let go in a way that's not fake, but that's authentic, grows. Look into your own life. I'm sure many of you would say that's true for yourselves. And similarly about the heart. It doesn't mean, you know, look, I can give you examples of where, you know, I get a cranky heart and maybe not so easy to let go, or maybe I don't want to let go because it feels good to be pissed off at, and don't get me started about some of the political figures or whatever, because I have to say, I do, there are certain political figures I owe a tremendous debt of gratitude to, because of all the struggles I've had. I got a lot of Dharma talks out of sharing how I fail, but how I still bring my good intention to try to work with them. So I got a lot of mileage out of them. So I do owe them a debt of gratitude. I still wish they'd go away, but I got some gratitude for that. But that's the important thing. We stay in touch with our intention. So the last thing I want to offer, I hope this is kind of held together as a talk, because I reflected on what I wanted to say, but I didn't, you know, write a talk out. So, you know, I realize I can kind of get all over the place. What I hope to offer, and then I will end with this. We know we've reflected on how life is, this human condition that we find ourselves in. Hopefully we've reflected that we will from time to time really take time to reflect on, well, what is it all about? Where do I want to aim my life? What am I aspiring towards? And then what are my intentions around that? And are there things I can do, practices, whatever, that can support me? And again, we just do the best we can. We're going to fail many times. You already know ahead of time. It's okay. Welcome to the club. You're a human being. So we don't have to beat ourselves up, but we just, even when we lose touch with our sincere aspirations, those deep intentions and aspirations haven't gone away. You just lost touch. So when we can remember to stay in touch with our intentions around all this, I have found it can be very supportive for me, even in the times when it's difficult. And so I just offer that to you. You can see how that is for yourself around just the power of when you can remember, and you won't remember every second of every day, but when you can remember, really keeping your intention alive as an ally and a support to come in with you. And then you can look to see, you know, how that helps unfold. Anyway, so I appreciate your kind attention. Thank you very much. We have some time now with, you know, maybe a little less than 15 minutes, 12, 13 minutes. I am paying attention to be respectful of the time. If anyone has any comments, questions, your own wisdom to share. Bill. And I'll try to, if I miss your hand, just wave around. I'll try my best not to, okay, to miss you.
Well, I did the hand thing, and I also did the little hand icon thing.
Okay. Oh, yeah, yeah, those gold hands.
And, the gold hands are helpful because it pops you up to the top window and makes you visible. You might be invisible to people if you don't use this. So I recommend that. So I just had more of a question than an observation, and that is that you talk about sort of doing any practice, and then almost like the Buddha talking to the people from Kalama, you do give some structure and some guidance. And I didn't write down all the points, but my concern would be if you tell people to do anything, which is, you know, very Zen in a way, we have a tremendous capacity for self-delusion. And I can bring up some examples and, you know, gobble up a lot of time doing that. But would you like to comment on how to avoid that kind of self-delusion?
Right. Yes. So that's, thank you for that, because you're exactly right. And what I would say is, first of all, we all have our blind spots. So by definition, I don't really, look, this is what I'm saying right now to this group that's my intuition that I can say it to this group of 25 people. I don't say that to everybody. It is what I really feel in my heart, but it's not always appropriate. But you're all sophisticated and can take it in the way I mean it. You're exactly right. And all I would say is we all have our blind spots. By definition, you can't see your blind spots, so it's okay. So you see what you can see. If we're sincere and keep in mind our intention and are able to be honest with ourselves, which we do the best we can. Sometimes we need someone else outside to give us some feedback, right? But we as honest as we can, we open to the feedback, and we look to see what the results. And if we do that, the life is a feedback loop, and it will let us know how it's going or not. And the reason I've been airing the last thing, and I see a couple of more hands up, we'll get to everybody, so don't worry. The reason that I say I can take it that far, really, I don't go around saying this that much because it is a little too extreme. I agree, too formless, and people will get into trouble. But because I think we go too far the other way. Everybody's saying, oh, you got to do this or you got to do that. And no matter what they say, doesn't matter. It's going to work for some people, and it's going to be a meltdown for others. And so I don't like to go bossing people around. Thank you. Am I pronouncing your name right, Charles Lee?
Yeah, you got it. It's like
hey, hi, how you doing?
Good. Hi, Richard. Thanks. Thanks for wonderful teaching. I've heard some of your talks just, you know, on sites. I think maybe probably on Dharma Seed. So it's nice to see you and talk with you in person. I think a few reflections about Descartes. I've always found that I remember growing up and my dad would tell me, I think therefore I am, or like introduce me to this concept, and very cerebral upbringing. But I've recently heard other Dharma teachers kind of, play with that phrase, turn things on its head. You know, I've heard, you know, I think therefore I suffer, or maybe it's the other way around. I am, therefore I think, or I heard Ajahn Brahm say this just the other night. I thought, therefore, I thought I was, showing that thinking kind of comes after experience, after after sense contact. And then just the second thing in terms of I like your idea of you can kind of do almost whatever you want. I think you do have to be, you have to have practiced and had some training. So, you know, when I started, it was, metta meditations, holding hard onto the anchor, this idea of, using things as rafts. And then, once you no longer need the raft, you don't carry it around, you dismantle it, let somebody else use it. And I really like Ajahn Amaro's quote, rest in the peace and ease that is the peace and ease of the mind and body, then pay attention to what disturbs that peace and ease. And so that's kind of where I'm at in my practice is, when I'm agitated, trying to, pay attention to that. So thanks.
Well, I appreciate, thank you, Charles. See, that's a perfect example of why I like to open it up to the wisdom of the group, because I have a lot of appreciation for the wisdom you shared. So thank you for that. And what you were pointing to really is more, I meant what I said, but I was trying to be a little humorous about, I think the way you articulated about from Amaro's quote is really what I'm talking about. I'm not saying we don't pay attention and we don't stay in we need to have been practiced to let go of the form so much that can support us. No question about it. So thank you very much. I appreciate that. Janie, is that, you said, it says Janie now, but I hope is Janie. Yes, please.
Yes, it's Janie.
Okay, hello.
Hi, it's great to see you in a real life person. I went through your series on YouTube, Samatha, the ones from 2013. It was eight episodes in the series.
Yes, that was that Jhana series.
Yes, it was fabulous.
Oh, well, thank you.
And I know this is kind of a diversion from what you were talking about tonight, but I basically tracked you down. So I've got you now. I have a question for you. In that series, you mentioned there's a handout, and I have gone all through the website, and not only can I not find the handout for that jhana series, but there was not even an email address on the website so I could send an email and ask someone.
Okay. Well, that's easy to fix. So let me just tell you right now. First of all, it may be because that jhana series is almost 10 years old or 8 or 9
right.
years old.
It is.
The link may be messed up. So I'm going to give you my email.
Great.
A couple of emails. And first of all, I have all those handouts and I can send them all to you.
Yeah.
And they're just summary notes. And also, if you want to contact me at all, you're welcome to at any time using these two emails I'm going to give you. And I'll leave that to you if you ever are motivated.
Great.
Yeah. So you ready? I'll put it in the chat.
I'm ready to write.
Okay. And then I'll put it in the chat.
For you, it's fine.
There's two. So the organization I'm connected with is the Metta Dharma Foundation.
Right.
And first of all, you can go on the website. It's just metadharma.org. And there's a place that says contact, and you can just get emails that way. And if you want the actual email, so shoot me an email, any of those, and I'll make sure you get those handouts.
Great. Thank you so much. That series has been so satisfying for me after going to numerous concentration retreats and reading numerous books. It just felt like you opened it up in a big way that I was really thirsty for.
Thank you. I mean, I'm happy. That makes me feel good that it was like that. And really what it was my book that I think Bill had mentioned on Samadhi, but it was based on that, but then we were able to really spread it out and take time and delve in, you know, beyond just the book. So anyway, so thank you. So good. Anything else, or was that it?
That was it. That was perfect. Thank you.
Okay, great. Okay, good. I can see that putting those golden, or it wasn't all golden. I think Charles Lee's was, there's different skin tones we can put up, but that it really does help because it moves people right up to, so I don't have to worry about finding and missing someone's. I didn't know about that, so that's helpful to me. Any other? We have just maybe 4 minutes before someone's going to read the metta cards. Anything else? We can end early. We don't, if there isn't anything. Yes, Corey, please.
Thank you. All of a sudden I was like, wait, where do I get my hand again?
That's okay. Just right, wave around works.
I like that you question some of the language, some of the translations, and really try to get at the essence of what was really being taught. And this idea of study the mind versus concentration, because of all the connotations and all that, you know, at the beginning you said something about effort and, but you don't want too much effort. You know, you don't want to get all caught up in it. And I really like that study the mind and using that instead of concentration. Is there anything more that you would like to say about that? Because I do get caught up sometimes in like, oh, I'm not concentrating. And, you know, and then I get all tense.
Yeah. So in particular around concentration in particular. Yeah. So I appreciate you bringing that up, and you're exactly right. We have these English translations, and look, we owe a debt of gratitude to the early Pali translators, you know, in the last century, who were really the first ones, and so because of them, they brought a certain word and then it stuck and we all use it, but then we're stuck with the English, our own English connotations, and we all bring our own connotation to the word concentration. You know, it can mean like focused on something, but the actual word, if you go back to the etymology of the word, it just means undistracted is the best, I think. Now, we're stuck with concentration. Of course, I don't have any influence out there. I can't change the world, but, so we're stuck with the word concentration because everyone uses it, but I think it's a terrible word. It's because we all add our own meaning. So it means undistracted. I'll just say a couple of things real quickly, and then you can explore it. I could talk to you, or you can point to some things to get into it more, but there's a few different ways an undistracted mind can manifest. Janie knows some of that because she's done that, and maybe Bill, having read my book, you can have an undistracted mind very pointed on an object, for example. That's kind of the way we think of the word concentrating on something. But you can also have an undistracted mind that's not so much on an object. It could be a wide open, spacious, receptive, choiceless awareness mind is equally undistracted and equally deep samadhi, this word samadhi. And so I could say a lot more about what would those different minds be, but if they're qualitatively different, but they're just as deeply concentrated, but in a different way. So that's my response.
I really appreciate that, because I find that I actually can have more steadiness of mind if I do a little focus on the breath and then allow it to open up and have that choiceless awareness, that I find more awareness, more being present, more, you know, but often the teachings are that you need to really learn the concentration on single pointedness first before you go to that.
That's so important what you're saying. This goes back because we're all different. So some people, if you said what you just said, that works well for you. If they said, well, just kind of open up to choiceless awareness, they'd be like, oh, what do you, it just would be too spacey for them. And they need an object, and they need to take it very far with an object. And at some point it opens up. Other people like you, and I don't know you well, but I'm just from what you've just said, it's the opposite. It's just like, that's their go-to natural sweet spot. So yeah, you could work with objects, but going, and that's, and you know, we're like half the people are one way and half of the other. So we're all so different. This is why we have to be very individualized for each of us. And it's not a one size fits all instruction. And none of them are right or wrong. It's what fits for each of us. And you can even have instructions that are complete opposites. It's going to be great for someone, and the other will work great for someone else. So I'm so happy you brought that up. Thank you. Is that okay for now, just from a time point of view? Okay, thank you. Anyway, I really appreciate all that you shared, and I appreciate, that was good stuff. And so thank you.